Hey everyone, this is Alex Goldman. If you are listening to this episode, then that means you are a paid member, and it is because of you that we can continue making the show, so thank you for helping to make it happen. This week we have a treat, which is an extended interview with Jenna from Descriptive Video Works, who appeared in the episode Chris's Watch List about movie audio descriptions. If you haven't listened to that yet, you definitely should. But if you have, you'll know that Jenna writes audio descriptions for things like movies and video games. And she helped us explain the incredible work that goes into making media more accessible for those with visual impairments. I loved doing this interview. I learned a ton, and I figured you'd like to hear a little bit more of it. So here it is. Please enjoy. Can you explain what audio descriptions are?
Definitely. Audio description is an optional additional audio track where a narrator will talk between existing dialogue to explain or describe the visuals that are on screen or on stage. And it exists in a variety of different formats. So for the most part, you can find it on streaming services as an alternative language option. You can sometimes find it on cable TV as the secondary audio channel. You can find it in video games as an accessibility option. And sometimes you can even ask for headsets at live events like theatrical productions, movie theaters. We've even done sporting events, parades, and awards shows. So sometimes you can get live audio description for in-person events as well.
How does one get into this line of work?
That's an interesting question because I feel like no two people have the same answer for that. Personally, I was in the Army for several years. I worked for a pharmaceutical company. I have a STEM degree, and I'm using none of those things at the moment. I kind of got into disability advocacy just because I liked the people that were involved in my college's club. I thought they were just really cool. And I just kept being into it and helping out a few friends that became virtually over live streaming during COVID. When we were all isolated, we figured out ways for me to virtually remote into their PC or their console to lend my inputs to theirs. And as secondary to that, I sort of ended up describing what was happening during cutscenes or during crucial gaming moments that were just really cool visually. And all of them were super nice and very kindly bullied me into attempting to get into this a little more professionally.
What is required of a person to get into or to be able to do these audio descriptions? Is there a certification process?
Weirdly enough, the answer is technically nothing, because there is no agreed upon certification process when it comes to being an audio describer.
What?
I believe there is some sort of certification for captioning. There are agreed upon set standards. But there is a certain level of subjectivity when it comes to audio descriptions that isn't really present in the equivalent fields of like dubbing or captioning. With audio description, it's a double-edged sword because there is more flexibility with the rules that we internally create for ourselves and the rules that larger clients create for us. But it also means that almost anyone can get into the field, and it just comes with training and practice, figuring out what works and what doesn't, what the audience wants.
Tell me a little bit about some of the sort of basic industry standards and what it takes to develop the intuition to write descriptions that, you know, fall outside of sort of the basic industry stuff that you have to do.
Most audio description companies will have their own internal list of standards that they default to in the absence of others. But large media clients, namely streaming services like Disney, Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon, will likely each have their own internal set of guidelines because they end up commissioning so much audio description. Netflix actually has made theirs available publicly, and theirs is a really good rule of thumb for what basic audio description guidelines are. So those include things like don't describe over dialogue, do not over-describe things, don't fill every available gap between dialogue with audio description, because if you do that, you are risking cognitive overload because it is a lot of information to process with people just constantly talking in your ears. Some of them will have different standards on, this was actually a point of contention in the community about 5 years ago, was demographic descriptions of humans. So more recently, we have moved into including as many demographics about a person as we can for whatever information is known or visually obvious to us. So that includes gender identity, approximate age, body composition, and ethnicity. So those are things that we as sighted people, we can see all of those things, assuming the person appears fully in frame and fully lit. These are things that are constantly visually reinforced for us, so we should not deprive the blind audience of that same information, especially when there's so much more effort being put into authenticity in casting. What is the point of doing that if you are going to deprive your marginalized audiences of that same information?
What are some words that you now use a shorter synonym for in order to economize your language?
When we were working on Mortal Kombat, there's a lot of people getting ripped in half that yes. happens on that. I now use bisect quite often because ripped in half or torn in half, it's only one syllable shorter, but bisect ends up being more useful than you would think.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that there is a flow and sort of a lilt to language. Cut in half feels a lot slower and more awkward than bisect, you know?
Right. Because you can also say what's being bisected, and you can throw that in there. Bisected at the waist, bisected through their shoulder, whatever. Right. Like.
So the reason we got in touch with you is because we received a question from our listener, Chris, who
yes.
is blind and also an avid movie watcher. And because he loves movies and uses audio description to enjoy them, obviously, he wanted to understand a little bit more about the inner workings of audio description. And mm-hmm. I'm hoping that you could help us unpack some of the sort of logistical, political elements that he was wondering about. You might not be able to, but if you can, that would be awesome.
Well, just for why the heck certain things do and don't have audio description and where it goes and what happens to it. I work in this industry and I still get confused by it sometimes, but it is sometimes a TV show or a movie will change hands, like the, you know, HBO might buy the rights for something from Netflix or vice versa. And in the process, when they acquire new film content, any existing audio description that might have already been created does not go with it. This is what is termed as a lack of pass-through. So the audio description is not passing through with the film. And this is something that we have been fighting for tooth and nail. We ourselves, advocacy organizations, viewers, we have been fighting for legislation to make that mandatory whenever something changes hands. But it has been an uphill battle 20 years long at this point. Now, there are some advantages to things changing hands. For example, if an older film did not previously have audio description, maybe when a new streaming platform buys it, it then gains audio description because that's the internal standard of that streaming platform. Maybe it had very old and outdated and low quality audio description, and it then gains a better audio description. But of course, the opposite is also true. If it previously had audio description, it might lose it. It might get replaced with like lower quality audio description. So it's kind of a mess. My white whale of audio description that I can never find is the British version of Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, because they brought in a famous RPG live play dungeon master to voice a more, like almost a character actor DM version of the audio description narration for the D&D movie, where she injects a lot of like remarks and improv into the audio description narration.
Oh, that's really fun. And that's such that movie is such a good representation of what it's like to be in a campaign too.
Exactly. It's fabulous. And I saw like a promotional trailer where she was recording this and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. I need to find this. And apparently it was only available during the theatrical release in the UK. And I have never been able to find it since then. I have asked friends to go buy the DVD in the UK. I've set up a VPN to try to get into streaming services in the UK to try and find it. And I have never found it anywhere. It is only the North American style version of that audio description for that film that I've ever been able to find. So yeah, even with all the resources at my disposal, oftentimes there are versions of the audio description that I cannot find.
What were some of the biggest lessons or surprises that you discovered as you were getting into the industry?
There's no like official certification process of becoming an audio describer, but that's not to say that there aren't any standards that go into it. So each audio description company has their own list of internal guidelines that they will default to in the absence of client guidelines. Large media companies will also have their own internal guidelines. So passively, there ends up being sort of this shared and agreed upon set of standards that most audio description companies will do, and you can take training on those things. There are a lot of different independent training programs to be able to at least teach you the basics, as with any form of technical writing. Knowing when you can or should bend the rules is something that you only learn after many years of practice of adhering to the rules, so that you gain the importance of those. One of the things that ended up kind of surprising me was when you can bend one of the golden rules of it, which is do not describe over dialogue. There are some occasions where it is more appropriate for a narrator to talk over a character and duck their audio behind it than it is to just let the character continually ramble on. So that can be when there are crowd noises in the background, when someone is like stuttering or repeating a line that they already said, laughter, screaming, anything that's not as narratively important as the visuals that are on screen is an instinct that's difficult to fight because you have to kind of make that judgment call. Is it more important to hear the villain's maniacal laughter, or is it more important to describe the beautiful shot of the rainy city at night where this maniacal laughter is echoing over it? So there are many, many situations where you have to make a judgment call.
One of the things that Chris told me the other day, he was telling me that he watched a movie with audio disc. Oh, I remember what it was. So it's this movie Oddity, which I think is British. And he told me that it was the first time he'd ever heard it, that when he watched it, when something tense happened, the audio describer would be like, the person is just outside the door. And like, they were like raising their voice. Is that common? Is that weird? Is that anything you've ever heard of?
Historically, the emotion level of a narrator's performance is, if you're thinking on like a scale of 1 to 10, and 10 being like completely freaking out, 1 being bland, boring robot, ideally an audio description narrator is supposed to be like between a 3 and a 5 on that scale, just emotive enough to blend in with the scene without being so distracting that they themselves sound like a character in that scene. More recently, we have noticed audience members favoring more emotive performances. This isn't true of everyone, of course. This is just sort of like a highly generalized industry trend that we've noticed. I suspect that that's partially due to an increase in the amount of content that is unfortunately narrated by text-to-speech or synthetic voices, which tend to be very bland and flat and not emotive at all. So maybe as people have been forced to listen to more of this text-to-speech audio description narration, they realize that they want the human element, but they want more of the human element because it's better and it's more immersive. Now, I have talked to a lot of people who have described similar films like what you mentioned, where the narrator themselves is acting like they are scared or acting like they are overjoyed, and they hate it. They are like, no, I want it to be like a little emotive, but not that emotive, but scale it back a little bit.
He was not a big fan. He didn't describe it too deeply, but he gave the impression that he was like, it was kind of ridiculous. And it does sound distracting.
Yeah, for sure. So that's something that we have been experimenting a little bit more with recently as well, just to see, okay, do people generally like this more? Like, how much is too much kind of thing?
Can you tell me more about Descriptive Video Works and what kind of services beyond just, you know, audio descriptions of movies you offer?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are under Keyword Studios, so we're one of several dozen, but we thankfully get to maintain a bit of autonomy. Until recently, we were specialized solely in audio description. More recently, we started offering sign language interpretation services, but the bulk of what we do is still purely just audio description, which is kind of rare for audio description production companies. Most of them also tend to do dubbing or translation services, captioning services, that kind of thing. listening, but we are almost entirely all audio description all the time. We do audio description in, I think it's over 24 different languages now. So we work in a lot of different countries. Our studio is in Vancouver, but we have people spread all across the globe. So we end up doing audio description primarily for streaming services. So anytime a film or TV show comes onto a streaming service, or it's an original by a streaming service, or that streaming service might be working through a backlog of old content, they will send it to a company like us to get the audio description done in however many languages they need it. But we also sometimes do the audio description for theatrical movie releases, for plays, for I've gotten to do the Game Awards 4 years running, where you go in person to an awards show and live improvise the description. There are also some live broadcast TV events like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, the Grammys, the American Music Awards, things like that.
I'm curious, how does someone with visual impairment play a video game? There are a lot of video games that are sort of, they're reflex based. And I feel like without being able to see things happening in the moment, what kind of games are you doing audio description for?
I guess I'll take a step back for a moment and ask, there are probably people who are wondering, like, how is someone who is blind even accessing audio description? Like, we've mentioned it being on streaming services, that kind of thing. How do you even get that if you are blind? So every single modern operating system has a screen reader built into it natively. So if you, on every iPhone and every Android, on Windows, on Mac, and on all current generation gaming consoles, every single one of them has an optional screen reader that you can enable where it removes mouse movements and adds swipes and gestures in the case of mobile OSs, keyboard shortcuts in the case of desktop, and a lot of other commands in the case of video game consoles. And it turns everything into text-to-speech, and it reads everything out to you. So this is why it's important for web developers to label your buttons on your website, because screen reader users are going to need those. If you post a photo on social media, make sure to add the alt text, because those image descriptions are what's going to be read to someone who is a screen reader user.
One question I had really quick is, like, you have done live events, you have done the Game Awards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is that experience like? Because you don't want to step on the words of anybody talking, but you have no way to predict when people are going to start and stop talking.
Live events are a whole different challenge because there are a few different varieties of live events. Some live events are fully pre-recorded. They just air live. So sometimes if it gets completed with enough time, we can actually write a full script and mix traditional audio description for it in time for the show to actually be pushed live stream. That's like the easiest type of live event. And then at the other side of things, there is the fully improvised live audio description, where we might receive some information about what's going to be shown. We might get a list of the names and faces of the award nominees. We might get, hey, there's going to be a musical number to this song. Here are the dancers' outfits. We might get no information at all, depending on how secure the project is. And I've worked on every end of the spectrum on this. The live improvised is, of course, by far the most difficult because you have no idea when people are going to start or stop talking. You just kind of have to get a feel for what the rhythm is going to be, and you're going to mess it up sometimes. That is the reality of live description, but that's okay. And you do the best you can, but it is probably the most cognitively intensive exercise that I've ever subjected myself to.
Chris, the listener who called us, very specifically was like, watching horror movies, he lost his eyesight when he was in high school, or most of his eyesight. And he said that one of the most difficult things for him is watching horror movies because he feels so unsatisfied with the way that jump scares are handled. So it's interesting that it's a thing that is definitely a discussion in the audio description world.
Yeah, there's another way to handle it that I don't see as often, but a couple friends of mine actually prefer. I think it was done in, I want to say, 10 Cloverfield Lane, where it will preempt the jump scare by a minimum of 5 seconds. So it will say something like, an explosion rocks the house. And then there's just 5 seconds of like silence or a character walking through something. And it sort of leaves you guessing, like, wait, is that right? I don't hear an and then the explosion happens. So that's like another method that I've seen used before, but I think what we just saw is more common.
I also love 10 Cloverfield Lane. These are all great examples for me. How often are companies using text-to-speech versus actual human narrators?
So that's a client-side decision. I always default to the American Council of the Blind's guidances on audio description quality, and they are still very staunchly against the use of synthetic voices in audio description for a variety of reasons, not the least of which that it tends to be lower quality and less emotive, but also because it deprives blind narrators of more work in an industry where it's already pretty difficult to break into it. But that doesn't stop a lot of larger clients from trying to save on costs. The justification, of course, is quality versus quantity. Sometimes there are some older movies and TV shows that otherwise would not get audio description because they just couldn't afford to pay for human narration and mixing. So the human written script ends up going to a synthetic voice, and then it gets automatically mixed, which, in my opinion, is low quality and not great, especially for a marginalized audience. But that is the justification for it, is just it's a cost-saving measure.
Right. But, you know, like if you were trying to do audio descriptions on Days of Our Lives, you know, there's 6,000 episodes or whatever. It would be really hard to do.
Yeah, got to pump those out.
What is the process of casting a narrator? Do you have sort of a stable of people you work with? Is that specific for the film? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so we personally maintain a database of narrators that we've worked with in the past or who we've onboarded, or sometimes we need to reach out to new people if we have a highly specific need. So the narration for audio description theoretically should sound like someone who could be cast in the world that they are narrating without sounding too much like one of the existing characters. So they should have, in general, the same vocal tone, the same accent. So if we have like a British period piece, we're going to cast someone with a posh British accent. If we have something that, you know, takes place in Jamaica, we're going to try to find someone with a Jamaican accent. We will try to favor blind talent wherever possible if they fit the casting considerations of that particular narration need.
Have you heard of any instances where people like Chris have made enough noise and said, like, hey, you know, this movie is not audio described. I would love to see it. And then enough attention is brought to the movie that then the distributor offers an audio description?
It has happened a lot in the past, yes, because social media, like outrage, is a very powerful tool sometimes. I've personally had to pay attention to more of the video game side of things, where a combination of fans on social media, fans submitting tickets to whatever their support website is, and actual consultants that the studio pays to advise them on what the best practices would be. If all of those are demanding the same features, then it is far more likely that they are actually going to implement those features. I, in fact, just dealt with this over this weekend. The Markiplier's new horror movie, Iron Lung, just debuted last Thursday/Friday. My theater said it was going to have audio description. I go in, ask for the headset, and there's silence. And it turns out the film does not have audio description at any of the theaters that I've been able to gather information from so far. I don't know if it even has captions. So that is something that I'm personally trying to rustle up some social media outrage on it. Well, not outrage. Social media criticism, constructive criticism that this is something that is needed and wanted in the community, something that I would have loved to see and made me very disappointed that it didn't have it. However, yes, that has happened in the past where things that people are demanding can influence what distribution platforms choose to audio describe. I know sometimes it feels like you are just needlessly screaming into the void, but even if your comment on Twitter ends up being like a data point on a spreadsheet, at some point, someone is going to review those data points to say, what should we audio describe next month? Oh, a lot of people have been talking about XYZ. Let's go for that.
I think of subtitles as being just endemic to streaming services and films. I feel like they're everywhere. It's very rare that you will find a movie that does not have subtitles. Why is it not the case that audio description is also endemic? Like, why does it have less penetration into the industry?
It's a good question. I think part of it is because a lot fewer people have heard of it and just don't know what it is and don't know how it could benefit them as well. So there aren't as many people demanding it. Lack of public knowledge is part of it. Another big part of it is regulations that have not caught up with industry needs, because there isn't a significant difference in the populations of blind and low vision people versus deaf and hard of hearing people. I got to give props to the deaf community. They are a lot more cohesive in their demands and advocacy work and legislation, whereas things tend to be a little more scattered depending on which country you're in for the blind community. So sometimes the push for legislation that would require a minimum number of broadcast hours to be audio described is more difficult. Sometimes lack of knowledge of what audio description is often spreads to the industry itself as well. People who are filmmakers themselves might not even know that it exists. People who are video game studios or live event producers might not even know what audio description is. So it's not nearly as ubiquitous, and that ends up counting against it. But that's not to say that there aren't people who are pushing for greater inclusivity. So, of course, the streaming services themselves have imposed internal standards on themselves beyond what is technically a strict legal requirement, because they have, I'm sure, done studies and market research to realize the amount that we invest into this is paid back to us in spades because of the number of people who end up subscribing to our streaming service, because they know content on our platform is more likely to be audio described than the next streaming service. Now, unfortunately, these streaming services tend to be very private about whether they have done any research on this and what the results of that research was. So I have no idea what the numbers are or how many people end up watching or needing audio description. But it is nice to see that capitalism is kind of working in our favor in this case, because the amount you end up investing into greater accessibility in this ends up paying off.
Chris noticed that it's very hard for him to find European films described, even though he feels like in his experience in Europe, accessibility tends to be much better than in the United States. And I'm curious if you have any idea why Europe would have less audio descriptions.
I mean, it depends. Part of it might be that there are audio descriptions, but they are either A, region locked, so you can't get them on the US version of the streaming services, or B, language locked. Typically, audio description is created for the source language in which a movie or film or TV show is created. So if, for example, we have something like Squid Game that is originally in Korean but ends up being popular in many other regions, that one is more likely to be audio described and dubbed in, you know, English or Spanish. However, if it is a less popular K-drama, it is likely only to be described in Korean. So it's possible that there are European films out there, but the only reason we can't find audio description for it is because that audio description doesn't exist in English.
If you listened to the main feed episode last week, you know that it's important to cast the right narrator for the right movie. And when I agreed to narrate the film for Chris, I wanted to make sure that I was the right fit for the job. My last question is, do you think I have the chops to be a narrator, an audio description narrator? Because now that I've said yes, I really want to do it, I'm kind of nervous.
I think anyone who is experienced in broadcast and voiceover could potentially have the chops to be an audio description narrator. If anyone's listening to this and you're thinking, man, I could really get into that, unfortunately, we are like inundated a little bit with narration talent who has just a standard North American accent and is between 20 and 50 years old. Normally, we're looking for people who have weird and different accents or vocal tones or extremely high or low voices. But in your case, you have that sort of smooth radio voice where you are experienced with narration, and I'm assuming you can sight read pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
from a script or be able to sight read lines and be able to get through accurately and with correct pronunciation the first time, in which case you are well suited to this and I would love to hear your voice with it.
Awesome. I think that I can pull that off. And if I can't do it the first time, I can at least re-record it.
that sounds fantastic. How about, do you want me to feed you a couple lines and just see how you do with something that
we could maybe... Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah? Just try it out? Wait. Give me a moment. I have to find something that's public.
Sure.
I wrote the audio description that is finally on Amazon for this C horror comedy called Big Freaking Rat. How about we read from that? It's so good. I can't recommend it enough. let me share my screen and just make this full screen. There we go. Some of the lines are a little shorter, but let's go in on line 108, see how you do.
Steve is dragged away. Amy's head whips around, searching. Huge bloodied jaws clamp down on Steve's upper body. Amy's eyes fixate down the path as Steve's bloody corpse lies against a fallen tree.
Now let's inject a bit more emotion into that, because this is a creature feature horror movie, and it is like violins are screaming at you, kind of climactic thing.
Got it. Amy's face contorts in horror as she slowly lowers her backpack to the ground. The rat's bloody jaws part. Amy takes off running. Furry claws pursue her down the path. Brown fur dashes by. Amy hides behind a tree, sobbing.
Nice. Very drama. Yay.
I think I got it. Oh, this is so exciting.
And you have never seen that script before, so no prep, no nothing.
Jenna, thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it. Hyperfixed is produced and edited by Emma Cortland, Victoria Dominguez-Peak, Sari Safra-Sukenik, and Amor Yates. Our engineer is Tony Williams. The music this week is by Breakmaster Cylinder and myself. A huge thanks again to Jenna and Descriptive Video Works. We absolutely could not have done this episode without their help. We will link to their website in our show notes for listeners to check out. Fun fact this week, and I know this one's probably going to be a little disappointing, I promise. In the next bonus episode, I'll have a better one, but this is all I got for you today. Fun fact this week is that Amityvilleville Episode 2 is out tomorrow, March 20th. We are reviewing the second Amityville film, Amityville 2, The Possession. A very uncomfortable film to watch. You can find that wherever you find podcasts. All right, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Radiotopia.